You are listening to BensTorah.com.
This year is the first of what I hope to be a series, the Shulchan Aruch series, which we will learn the Siman in Shulchan Aruch B'Iyun. And Muktzeh is a lot more than meets the eye. People who have been from for 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80 years have been living with the halachas of Muktzeh, but there's so much more that people are not aware of that really do come up on a regular, consistent basis. That as we learn more, we'll see the issues that arise, that come up. I want to dedicate the learning this morning, Le'ili Nishmas, Yanki Mamet's father, Harav David Ben Pesach, Zichron Levracha, and Refua Shlema, for his cousin, for Yanki's cousin, Harav Moshe Yosef Ben Basia. And also thank Mr. Moish Frankel for sponsoring this morning's shiur. So let's start with the Shulchan Aruch, and then we will you'll realize that the Shulchan Aruch in this morning's shiur, which is a Hakdama shiur, is really just going to be a little bit of a pretext to say what I want to say. But next week we'll get actually into the Shulchan Aruch. So I told you it's a Shulchan Aruch shiur, so let's start with the Shulchan Aruch. Shesimen Shinches says the Shulchan Aruch the following. First of all, let's look at the Koteres. The Mechaber titles the Siman Dvarim Hamutarim V'Asurim L'Taltel B'Shabbos. The first thing that we have to know is that our children, when they say you can't touch Muktzeh, are wrong. There's no issue in touching Muktzeh. You could walk over to you could walk over to a truck. You could walk over to a minivan. You could hug it. You could kiss it all you want. The only thing you're not allowed to do is move Muktzeh. So therefore, there's no issur of negiyah, but that's going to be one of the se'ifim later on where this Shulchan Aruch will say that you're allowed to blow muktzeh if you have a pen on the table and you don't like it. It looks ugly on the table. So you're not allowed to move it with your hands. It's not called tzarech mekomo. You are allowed to blow it away. If there's a dead ant on the table, well, that might be muktzeh machmas mias. You might be able to take it with your hands, but without, if it's a walking ant, maybe it's not Mia, so you could certainly blow it off the table. So blowing is fine. We're not going to talk, we'll talk about using your other parts of your body, that's going to be much later in the Siman. But you see, the Shulchan Aruch is saying letalta, which means to move, not to touch. There's no issur in touching Muktzeh. Says the Shulchan Aruch, kol hakelim nitalim b'shabbos. Those words seem very innocuous, but in fact, they are incredibly, it's an incredible chiddush. It's an incredible chiddush to say that kol hakelim are nitalim b'shabbos. Why is it a chiddush? Because if you know where this halacha is coming from, if we learn a little bit of the history of Hilchos Muktzeh, we'll realize that the fact that the Shulchan Aruch is saying kol hakelim can be moved on Shabbos is something that historically was not always true. As you'll see, close, Nehemiah, we'll see that in a moment. As you'll see, continues the Shulchan Aruch, kol hakelim nitalim b'shabbos chutz mimuktzeh machmas chisaron kis. The only muktzeh that you're not allowed to move is muktzeh machmas chisaron kis, things that are valuable. We'll have to define that next week, Be'ezus Hashem. But anything other than things that are very valuable, let's talk about a scalpel's surgeon, or more commonly, halach l'maisa in our day-to-day living is a Moel's knife. That's the classic example of something that's muktzeh machmas chisaron kis. But other than that, all kelim could be moved on Shabbos. Now, why is that a big chiddush? Let's look at the history of muktzeh as it evolved from the beginning of time. This is a sugya in source number one. The Gemara in Shabbos, Kufchav Gimel of Beis, says the following. A very striking braisa, which sort of throws us off, and the Gemara will have to clarify. In the early part of history, of Jewish history, you're allowed to move only three kelim on Shabbos. Miktzoa shel dveila, vizuama listran shel kdeira, v'sakin ktana shel gabei shulchan. That means, we'll see in a moment, Rashi will explain what's unique about these three things. You're not allowed to move a table, you're not allowed to move a chair, you're not allowed to move a corkscrew. You're not allowed to move a fork. All you're allowed to move on Shabbos at this point in history are three things. Says Rashi, Shlosha kelim v'su lo. No other kelim are allowed to be moved. L'kaman amirin d'vimei nechemya ben chachliya v'bay sheni gozra al tiltu kol hakelim. We'll see, and we will see the psukim shortly, that Rashi tells us that this takana of muktzeh was instituted by Nehemiah. It's the same Nehemiah who brought Klal Yisrael back to build Bayis Sheni in the about 400 years before the Common Era. So that's about 2,400 years ago. That's when Muktzah began. Why did he do it? Kedei ligdor geder lahachmer biyisurei Shabbos. People were mipnei shayim mekilin ba. We'll see that shortly. You know, let's jump to the second source. Let's jump to page 2.
There's no muktzah before that?
There's no muktzah before that.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
He made it worse.
Except for the cases that there were the muktzah before that. Source number 2 says the pasuk in Nehemiah. This is Nehemiah himself speaking. Bayomim haheima. Ra'isi biyuhuda dorchim kitas b'shabbos. Right? Everybody talks about the good olden days when we were so frum and in the shtetl everybody was wonderful. Well, guess what? In the time of Nehemiah, B'nai Yisrael were building the second Beis HaMikdash in Eretz Yisrael, in Yerushalayim no less. What were people doing? They were mamish dorchim gitos b'shabbos. They were crushing grapes. They were making wine. Mevim ha'aremos. They were loading things up on donkeys. That's Nisr Mechamer Doraisa. Etc. They would bring everything to Yerushalayim b'yom ha'shabbos. Umochrim b'shabbos l'vnei Yehuda. All the merchants would come to Yerushalayim and would be had the market days on. I don't know if they had the market days, but the market would be open on Shabbos in Yerushalayim. I remember I was in Yerushalayim, it's been 10, 15 years ago, and it was Friday afternoon, very late Friday afternoon. It must have been about a half hour for Shabbos before Shabbos. And I'm driving down, and I'm taking probably a cab, or walking down Rehov Yafo. I was going to the Old City for Shabbos, and there's a cigarette, you know, newspaper cigarette stand right off Rehov Yafo, getting close to the Ir Atika, and right walking in, I see an older Yerushalmi man wearing a strimal, surrounded by three or four younger men. It was a Shmuel Orbach. Shmuel Orbach was following what his father had done, Shlomo Zalman Zatzal, trying to convince the storekeepers in Yerushalayim to keep Shabbos. That's why I don't think Shmuel Orbach was going into, you know, to buy himself the latest Hamodia or Mishpach magazine. No offense to any of the people Shabbos. At Shul. Get the right last cigarette for Shabbos. Shmuel had to chaper right now. Okay, but this is in Yerushalayim. They had the markets were open. So says Nehemiah, he's not just telling you what I saw. V'amralahem. I said to them, what's this terrible thing that you're doing? Mechal mes Shabbos. But now look at the next pasuk. It's a little lighter in color. It's gray. Va'omra. And I said, these are now the takanos that Nehemiah instituted for fixing Shmiras Shabbos in Yerushalayim in the time of the Bayis Sheni. V'yisagru hadlasos. I'm going to close the doors to the ear to the city of Yerushalayim, not to allow the merchants, the Jagaisha merchants in. I'm going to stand guards there. No one's going to be able to come in. And from that time in, he threatened all the people outside of the city. If you dare try to do any business with our people, with the Jewish people at Shabbos, I'm going to beat you up. And he scared them away, and they didn't. And that's how Nehemiah fixed Shabbos. Obviously, this pasuk doesn't mention anything about Muktzah, but our Gemara is telling us that this, you could turn back, that this these takanas of Nehemiah were more far-ranging than just the threatening the business people, the Geisha business people, not to enter Yerushalayim. It was a broad plan of chizuk, of Hilchos Shabbos, in his efforts. And one of the other things that we see in our Gemara that's not evident in the Pesukim is this point. We have a Mesorah from the time of Nehemiah till the Gemara, you know, till this Braisa was written, that Nehemiah was the one who also instituted Muktzah. So how did he institute Muktzah? At that point, when he saw the Chil Shabbos was so terrible, he made a flat-out statement. Every single kli, every utensil in your house is usher to move on Shabbos. Including your chair, including your table, including everything. The corks and that corkscrew. Except these three kelim, which are necessary for a suddah of Shabbos, for onik Shabbos. What?
Wasn't he afraid that he sounded like a stuki?
I guess not.
Like a kusi.
I guess not. Look at the second paragraph of source number 1. Then the Gemara says that there were four stages in history after that. Hitiru. V'chazru v'hitiru. V'chazru v'hitiru. Look at Rashi. Hitiru od k'shero she'chazru l'hizor k'tas b'yisr Shabbos. Chazru hitiru k'shenizru yoser v'chazru hitiru. Little by little, Nehemiah's attempts got more and more successful. People started keeping a little bit more Shabbos, and as Klal Yisrael started being more careful with Hilchos Shabbos, Nehemiah was able to make more lenient his incredibly inclusive Chumrah. Ad Sha'amru, go back the line to the Gemara. Ad Sha'amru, the final stage was Kol HaKelim Nitolim B'Shabbos. The final stage of this Takana was, originally it was everything was Aser with three things permitted. The final conclusion was Kol HaKelim Nitolim B'Shabbos, all things are permitted except for Chutz Min HaMaser HaGod V'Yosid Shamacharisha, which Rashi explains, these are things that are Mukta Machmas Chisaron Kis. Now you can look back in your Shulchan Aruch at the first line of the Shulchan Aruch and you appreciate the first three words of the Shulchan Aruch. Because we Paskin nowadays, we no longer have those. We think Hilchos Mukta is hard. Imagine what life was like in the time of Nehemiah when you couldn't move anything. Mamash couldn't use anything except the most basic things for food, for meal, eating. Other than the basic eating utensils, everything else was Mukta. That's the words of the Shulchan Aruch. That's our Shulchan Aruch comes to this line in the Gemara. Kol HaKelim Nitalim in the Shulchan Aruch on top. Kol HaKelim Nitalim v'Shabbos Chutz Mimukta Machmas Chisaron Kis. And those are the two examples that the Gemara gives, which we will explain next week. Let's look at these. I don't know how long this period, this time period, spanned. It could have been all in the life of Nehemiah, but I don't know how long he lived. That's probably a pasuk explicitly in Nehemiah. But look on the bottom. The Gemara tells us what are the four stages. And it's important that we look at the kinds of mukta that he's talking about, because we know that there are a lot of kinds of mukta. The Shulchan Aruch, the Beis Yosef says that there are six types of mukta. Then we have mukta machmas chisaron kis, we have mukta machmas isser, we have nolad, we have mukta machmas mius, we have mukta machmas isser, we have mukta machmas kufa, lots of different kinds of mukta. But look at what the stages of heter that went through Nehemiah's stages. On the first dot, this is the Gemara, I just made it clear with my bullets. First stage was Hitiru Dava Shablachtu Leheter, Beletzarach Gufa, Beletzarach Mekomo. He allowed you to use a corkscrew. Which is a Klisham Lachtu Leheter. Vechazru Hitiru Mai Chama Letzel. A further heter was, let's say you didn't have to use a corkscrew, you just wanted to, the corkscrew was left in the rain and would get rusty from the rain, so he let you even bring it in so the corkscrew wouldn't get ruined. Thirdly, then he said you're even allowed to use a hammer. This is what we are familiar with, the halacha is, that you could use a hammer to open up a coconut. You could use a hammer to scratch your back, or you could use a hammer if it's sitting on the table where you need to put your plate down, or you need to put your bowl of soup down, you can move it out of the way. And that is how we end up paskening, and that's the history of mukta. That's the first point I wanted to make. Adkan, point number one. Point number two. It seems that before Nehemiah, everything was okay. Comes Nehemiah and he makes this incredibly overwhelming, oppressive takana that you can't move anything at all. And then it finally whittles down to what we're familiar with. The problem is we have two Gemaras that seem to say otherwise. The two Gemaras in Shas, one more famous than the other, that seems to indicate that Mukta on some level is also Daraisa. Look at source number three. Source number three is one of those really fun Gemaras where the Gemara says, if you do this, you could do one action and violate, five, six Isurim, all in one fell swoop. Says the Gemara Psachim Em Zayinim and Beis, source number three, HaMevashel, Gid HaNasha, B'Chelev, B'Yom Tov, V'Ochlo. Right, you boil up one soup, one pot, and eat it, you could get Chamesh, you get five sets of Malkus. Lokum Misham Mevashel, Lokum Misham, etc., etc. And one of the things that you get Malkus for, Malkus obviously means you violated an Isser, Midaraisa, Atze Mukta. He asks the Gemara, how can you get Malkus? Mukta Daraisa he? Amrali in, yes it is Daraisa. Mukta is Daraisa. Dechsiv, let's just talk about what is Atze Mukta. Atze Mukta means you cut off a branch from a tree to be able to light your fire. So that branch on the tree before Shabbos was inaccessible. Why was that branch on the tree inaccessible? Because it was attached. And the only way to access it would be by violating the Issur D'oraisa of Kotzer. So the Gemara says, yes, there is an Issur D'oraisa to move the Mukta tree. Tichsiv, wood for the fire. Tichsiv, hayab yom hashishi veichinu es asher yaviu. Pasuk says that you have to, things they use on Shabbos has to be prepared, veichinu. And there's a lo sase of lo tase komalacha. Explicit Gemara that says that muktzah is indeed midah. Alright, if that's not enough, there's the more famous Gemara in Beitza. Why is it famous? It's because anyone who started Beitza got to Beitza Amud Beis. So there, there's Hachana de Rabba. The Gemara says that also Veichino es Asher Yaviu. We see that you have to have Hachana. The same pasuk, actually. The same pasuk. You need Hachana for the things that you use on Shabbos. It has to be prepared. So you have two sources that there's an Isser d'Oraisa or a Chiyav d'Oraisa, however you want to say it. Maybe not say Analos, let's say perhaps of Mukta that clearly preceded Nechemya by 1,000 years. It's Midoraisa. So we have two answers, and they're going to really frame the halachas of mukta for us in a very exceptional framework. Says the Pnei Yoshua, he asks our question, and he asks to the question mark. He says, "Ela al korchach, when do we say that there's mukta d'oraisa? D'lo ayri rabba ela mi mukta gomer hayoser chomer." Says the Pnei Yoshua, there are different levels of mukta. Yes. The severe level of mukta will indeed be d'oraisa. But what's severe and what's not severe? So let's see what he considers severe. Kegon ba'atzei mukta shenoshru b'yom tov. Pieces of wood that came off a tree on Yom Tov, teheveli, nolad, umukta machmas iser. Nolad, I'll give you a very common example of nolad. You have an air conditioner that leaks. Let me rephrase that. You have an air conditioner that as it's heating, as it's giving off your cool air, there's condensation inside the unit, and some water, the condensate drips onto either the floor, if it's outside, if it's inside, I hope not, but you'll have a bucket there. That water is nolad. Why is that water nolad? Because that water didn't exist before Shabbos. I mean, yes, the scientists will tell me it was in gaseous form in the air, because even the air has a tiny bit of humidity, and it was just, you know, so. But as far as our eyes are concerned, when I look at the air, I don't see any drips of water. On Shabbos, that moisture in the air, the humidity, condensates and falls to the ground into my bucket. That bucket is nolad. Nolad is mukta. That bucket of water is mukta. Mukta mide.
You are listening to BensTorah.com.
Mukta mide. It might be mukta mide araisa. That bucket of water might be mukta midoraisa. Okay, we're not going to get into those halachas yet, but that's the direction. And similarly, this kind of wood that was on a tree before Shabbos, and the only way I could access that wood would be if I would violate an issur d'oraisa of pruning the tree, of cutting the wood off the tree. So that would also be a kind of issur that would be d'oraisa pre-Nechemya. That's the Pnei Yeshua's explanation for how to deal with these sugyas that indicate it's d'oraisa, yet we've been assuming that it's a gzeira of Nechemya. The Chasam Sofer, he might be a little bit different. Probably is different. Look at the Chasam Sofer in Shas Tshuvas, Siman Ayin Tes and Orach Chaim. The Chasam Sofer says, Le'echol Mukta hu Isser D'Oraisa. To consume the Mukta, that's an Isser D'Oraisa. Because the Psukim that were talked about in Pesachim and in Beitza, those were both referring to cases where you're using up the wood to burn them, you're eating the food that wasn't prepared before Shabbos. There's a consumption. Consumption doesn't just mean with your mouth. It means consuming it even by lighting them on fire to use the heat. So if you're consuming something, moving an item on Shabbos, that's mukzah, that's going to be nisr. Of course, that's only nisr d'rabban, and that's nechemya. But to consume it, if it didn't have hachan, if it wasn't prepared for Shabbos use, that's indeed going to be nisr d'rais. That's how he resolves the stira that we have in Chazal. Okay.
Where does he come with that?
Well, because the only source, he comes to this by use of his svara alone. If we have two gemaras that sound like it's d'oraisa, but we have other chazals that say it's only d'rabbanan, and the two chazals that say it's d'oraisa are talking about a case where it's actually being consumed. Mm-hmm. So Chasam Sofer is pointing to that being okay. That's the point, that's the nekuda, that's the mechalik. So we have two kinds of mukta. We have mukta d'oraisa, which is severe mukta, as the Pnei Yoshua is saying, like nolad, like things that I can't access unless I do an issur d'oraisa. And then there's the lighter mukta, all the kalim that Nechemya asked. If life ended here, we'd be fine, we'd be happy. I have black and white, darais and darabanan, no problem. The problem is, there's a story that we all know. The story of David HaMelech's death on Shabbos when he was 70 years old. So the Gemara tells the story that the Malach HaMavis wanted to come and take him, it was time for him to go, and the Malach HaMavis comes and finds that David HaMelech is learning Torah. So the Malach HaMavis does not have the capacity to take his life while he's learning Torah. And David HaMelech knew he was going to die on Shabbos when he was 70, so therefore he made sure that his entire Shabbos was learning Torah without stopping for a moment. I wondered if he davened. I don't know if he davened. That's something we should look into. So finally, this is the story in the Gemara Shabbos, Laman and Beis. You could look inside if you want. Finally, the Malach HaMavis comes up with a solution, and he makes a little ruckus outside, and David HaMelech runs outside to see what happened, the big bang that he heard outside, a tree fell down or something, and he tripped on the step, and the Malach HaMavis took his life, he killed him. Shlom, that's the story that you know. The next line is what I need to have for our sugya. Shalach l'shlomo l'bei midrash. Shlomo, who's now, until now, was the prince and at this point might just about be the melech, the first shiloh that comes to him was, what do I do with my father? It was Shabbos. And a body is? Well, when did Shlomo HaMelech and David HaMelech live? Before Nechemya. Is this body nolad? No. A dead body. It's nolad when it's born, 70 years old. No, it's not nolad. It's been here the whole time. So the body's not nolad. Is the only way to access the body by violating an issa d'oraisa, like cutting something off a tree? No. So it's not issa d'oraisa. Nechemya didn't come around here. What is Shlomo HaMelech asking? He asked the Rechacham in the base marriage, Abba Meis, Umuta Bachama, Ma'asa. How can I move my father's body? He's sitting in the sun, deteriorating from the heat. Ma'asa. Shalchalo, they come up with a very creative solution. You should take a loaf of bread or take a baby, put it on David's body, and you could lift up David as a way of indirectly lifting up, you're really moving the loaf of bread, and that's how you could move Muktzah, it's called Tiltil, whatever you want to call Tiltim and Hatzah, Tiltil Al-Din Dover Achad, without getting into the details of that halach. Yeah. No. No, it's not a possible Hatzah. I'm assuming he was inside the city. The city had walls. So this doesn't fit into our box. It's not the Oraisa, it's not the Rabbanan, it's a middle stage. Comes the Shulchan Aruch HaRav. The Shulchan Aruch HaRav is gifted at dealing with shailas that the Achronim ask, and in presenting the halachos with an incredible clarity, he answers up questions that the Achronim ask without actually asking it as a question with an answer. He bavarns many, many shots. This is just the style of the Shulchan Aruch HaRav. He introduces Muktzah. Bimei Nechemya ben Chachliya, this is Shulchan Aruch HaRav, Shem Chesif Tezayin. Bimei Nechemya ben Chachliya, the Am was Mezalzim b'Yisr Shabbos, so they made a geder for L'Yisr Hotzah, that we'll talk about later, and they made a gzer on Kol HaKelim, except for the things that you need for the Seudas Shabbos, and then little by little they relax the limitations. Now look at Siv Yudzah. Aval kol minei uchlu mumashkim, all food items and drinks, hamutarim b'Shabbos, v'chol minei sfarim, and sfarim, shemutu likros behem, that is permitted to read, right? There might be some books that are not allowed to be read on Shabbos, that's a siman in Shulchan Aruch dedicated to that. Mutu l'tatlam, books, foods, and drinks were never in any stage usher in Tiltil. Afir shalol l'tzorach klal. He's pointing to something very directly. Nechemya's gzeir was only on Kalim. He's introducing a new level of Muktzah. Midoraisa, we spoke with Sola Pnei Yeshua, talked about Nolad and Muktzah Machmas Isser, that the only way to access the wood is to cut it off a tree. And Nechemya comes later with Kalim. And he says, in between, there was a point in history in between, I don't know when it was. It was certainly around by the time of Shlomo HaMelech, or maybe it was earlier than the Shlomo HaMelech, David and Shlomo. And that is Davar She'eno Ra'ui. Let's pause here. What we just did is we created three types of mukta. I don't mean three halachas, not three categories of mukta, mukma and matzah, the isser and this and this. We created three types of mukta that have three stages in the history of mukta. Midoraisa is the most chamer, as I outlined in front of you. Why is nolad or mukta machmas isser aser doraisa? Apparently, the yesod of mukta is something that, in your mind, you're makta. Makta means you push it away. You're makta your das from something. What is the thing that you are the most makta from your das? The thing that you're most makta from your das is something that doesn't even exist. So that's super hakta. Second to that is what? Something. What else is you makta from your das? Something that you can't access on Shabbos. The only way to access it would be to break Shabbos midaraisa. That's mukta machmas iser. So, according to the Torah law, all you have from Yidasur Yidaraisa is the kind of mukta is that kind of item. And this is not just a kli, right? Water that condensates, that condenses, is not a kli. A beitza that's born on Shabbos or on whatever it is, on Yontif, is not a kli. This could apply to whether it's a kli or not. But something's nolad, or chunk of wood, is not a kli either. This is going to be super aser doraisa because in your mind you're maxed entirely. Then we have this middle level that happens somewhere between the Torah and Shlomo HaMelech, and that's something, as the Shulchan Aruch Rav said, is dover she'enu ro'i b'shabbos. That's going to be something that is useless. Something that's useless. A dead body has no use. And therefore, that's going to be something that, how much in your mind are you? It's not like you don't, you're not makta, it's so strong, like your makta sense doesn't exist or that you cannot access other than violating an Isidoraisa. But it's something that's useless. So it's like a memela. Thank you, Mr. Bergman. It's a memela dika haktsa. In your mind, you're just not really misyachis to it because it's pointless, it's useless. It's a stone, it's a pebble, it's a rock, it's a leaf, it's a stick, it's a branch on the floor, or a dead body for the same price. That's going to be that sort of natural type of huktza, not because you were maktzit, but just naturally, I had no, there's nothing, it wasn't, it's not, there's nothing I could do with it, so of course it's just going to naturally be muktza. And then you have this third, lowest level, what mukta drabbana, which is going to be we're going to talk about all these three categories, is the gzeres nechemu is only kelim, which have definitive uses, definitive purposes, whether they be uses like a spoon and a fork, which were never aser, or they be uses like a hammer, which has a use. It happens to be you're not supposed to do that use on Shabbos, but it has a use, as opposed to wood on a tree, which I can't even access unless I violate an Issur D'oraisa. So that's mukta machmas iser. A hammer is a kli shel melech to l'iser, and that was not aser d'oraisa, that was not aser in the time of Shlomo Melech. That was where Nechemya came and instituted his takana of
mukta. And the useless mukta,
that middle ground,
that middle stage, is a gzeira.
Well, it's not d'oraisa. Yes, it has to be gzeira of somebody, either of David HaMelech or earlier. Yes.
Gzeira.
Maybe it was a gzeira of Moshe Rabbeinu. I don't know.
You said
Moshe Rabbeinu made takanas, right? Shivas Yumei Mishta, Shivas Yumei Avelis is a takana d'rabbanan of Moshe Rabbeinu. That's what Rebbe Kaveger says in the Shulchan Aruch and Hilchos
Avelis. You said Mukta Machmas Iser was a d'oraisa.
Yes. Mukta Machmas Iser is correct. Not kli shel melech to l'iser. Correct. That's what I'm distinguishing. Kli shel melech to l'iser is that. Yeah. Okay. Rabosai, in my 3 minutes that I have left, I want to finish off this sugya. The second point in the introduction to Hilchos Mukta are what are the reasons for mukta. The reasons for mukta. Let's look in the Beis Yosef. I told you it would be a Shulchan Aruch shir. So I have to have. When you learn the Shulchan Aruch, there's no such thing as learning Shulchan Aruch without the Beis Yosef. And that's because the Beis Yosef, let me rephrase it, the author of the Shulchan Aruch said, when he wrote his Shulchan Aruch, that I'm writing a Beis Yosef to give you the background so you know, so you understand what you will read when you will read my Shulchan Aruch. So, says the Beis Yosef in the introduction to this Simon Shemches, B'simon zev haba ma'achrav atzov shemen yud beis, misparu dinei ha-mukta. Uvitam iser tiltol, dvarim ha-muktim, kosav ha-rambam. Let's see the Rambam. The Rambam is going to say, let's read a little bit of the Rambam, and maybe we'll ask a question, and we'll finish for today. look at the Rambam, because this is the Yesod of Hilchas Mukta, of the reasons why there's an Isra Mukta. Now, keep in mind, if the Rambam is going to ask, why is it Asur to have Mukta, he's clearly not talking about Mukta Daraisa, because you're not going to look for a reason. Maybe you will, but in Mor Nevuchim, not in Hilchas Shabbos. So in Hilchas Shabbos, in the Yad, Asur Chacham L'Tatl, he's clearly talking about the Isra Drabbaran of Mukta, Mipnei Ma Nagel B'Isra Zeh. Amru. Now he's going to say a Kal V'Chomer. Listen to the Kal V'Chomer of why there's an Isra Mukta. Umayim his hiru neviim v'tzivah shelo yehi luchach b'Shabbos ki luchach b'chol. You're not allowed to walk on Shabbos like you walk on Tuesday. You're not allowed to talk on Shabbos like you talk on Wednesday. If you can't walk on Shabbos and you can't talk on Shabbos, that's the pasuk in Yeshaya that says you can't walk and talk like you do on a weekday. Kal V'Chomer shelo yehi tiltul Shabbos ki tiltul b'chol. It has to be. What's the source for the Rambam?
Smart.
There is no source. There's no Gemara. He's making it up himself. It's his own logic. It's Kal V'Chomer that the Rambam created with his own mind, which is very logical. But he adds, Kedei, why must you say this Kal V'Chomer that if you can't walk and talk regularly, you can't carry things regularly? Because look, Kedei Shelo Yiyah Kiyom Chol Be'enav V'yavo Lahagbia U'Sakin Kelim Mipina Lepina Mibayis Lebayis. If there was no Hilchas Mukta, you'd just be moving everything, and stones, and rocks, and, now, by the way, stones and rocks would be in which category? David and Shlomo, not Nechemya. Nechemya only made his gzeira on Kalim. So he's already talking about stones and rocks. So he's talking about the earlier level of Isra Mukta. He says that was also established by whatever personality in our Jewish history who made that takkan, which we don't know who it was, we just know it happened by the time David and Shlomo came around. What's going to happen? If you're going to end up moving things all over the place on Shabbos without any parameters of what you can and can't move, nimtza shalosh shavas ubatel hatam, you're going to lose the whole tam of Shabbos, not tam like the flavor, but tam in terms of the whole reason that the Torah gives for Shabbos. You're supposed to rest in here by you being able to move everything and not have any limitation or parameters to hold you in, to restrain you, you're going to end up doing, you're not going to have a day of menucha. Number two, va'ol kishyevakir v'yataltil kelim. Now this has an incredible diuk. I'll tell it to you in a moment. When you investigate, when you inspect and move around kelim shemalachim l'isser, efshir sheyisasek bohen ma'at. You might deal with them a little bit. V'yavali de melacha. Clearly, that's referring to kli shemlachta le'iser. You remember when we started this shir, and I pointed out there's no iser to touch muktza. Why? Why is there no iser to touch muktza? Why is it only iser to move? I think it's meduyik in this halacha. He says the only time we're worried that you might come to take the kli and actually go with it somewhere is if you're already going to be inspecting it and move it a little bit, then we're worried you're going to take it a step further. If you touch things, if I put my hand down, we're not worried, I'm looking at you, and I put my hand wherever I put my hand, wherever I put my hand, on whoever I put my hand, we're not worried by putting my hand somewhere that I'm going to come to move it. It's that once I'm engaging with the kli, moving it, then I might come to, you know, move it in a way that it shouldn't. And finally, the third pshat of the Rambam is because of people who are retired. People are retired, their Tuesday and their Shabbos are one and the same. So how will their Shabbos be nicker? How will their Shabbos be nicker, different, qualitatively different than their Tuesdays? In order to have, even for somebody who doesn't work all week, and his Shabbos should still be different, we wanted to create these halachas of Mukta that will constitute a shvisa hanikeres, so that your day on Shabbos is different. Now that's the end of the Rambam. We have to stop here. But I just want to finish off with a question. The question is, as the Ravid ever so gently points out to the Rambam, is that he's very creative, he's very logical, but he's making it all up. And as he's making it all up, but notwithstanding, not only is he making it all up, but the Gemara asked why is there a Mukta, and the Gemara gave a reason, none of them was that, and that wasn't what the Rambam says. Look at the Gemara in Maseches Shabbos and in Maseches Beya in source number 11. The Gemara there says, "Tiltil gufei, lav mishum hotzai." Rashi explains, what does it mean that Mukta is because of hotzai? Rashi says, Tchilas hotza al yedei tiltil hi. Whenever you start to, what's the first stage in take something out of the Eruv? Take something out to Rishus HaRabim. First you have to lift it up. So therefore, now let's go back to Nehemiah. Nehemiah sees that people are doing terrible things on Shabbos. And what does Nehemiah want to prevent? What gzeira does he want? What is he trying to stop? Presumably Chil Shabbos Daraisa. Presumably. So what Chil Shabbos Daraisa, by making these klisha malach til issers, I'm saying that's true, that could be a reason also. But by his primary concern is that, the Gemara says, his primary concern is that they're going to do hotzah. So if you just say, you can't lift something up, so guess what? You nipped it in the bud. You preempted any further violation, because you're not going to have hotzah if you can't lift it up in the first place. Okay, so that's the question that we have to leave. The question of the Rambam, why is the Rambam giving all these creative solutions, explanations of why Muktzah is mutter, of why Muktzah is aser, when it's an explicit Gemara that says that it's because of Nehemiah's concern for hotzah, to prevent hotzah mitchila.
You have been listening to a presentation of BensTorah.com.